This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
We're taking a look at what's happening across the causeway in Singapore. U.S. President Donald J. Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un pledged on today, rather, to work towards a complete denuclearization on the Korean Peninsula, while Washington committed to providing security guarantees for its old enemy. But a joint statement signed at the end of this historic summit gave few details on how either goal would be achieved.
Yep, that's right. Actually, we have some audio from that signing ceremony where President Trump spoke about his meeting with Kim.
We're very proud of what took place today. I think our whole relationship with North Korea and the Korean Peninsula is it's going to be a very much different situation than it has in the past. We both want to do something. We both are going to do something. And we have developed a very special bond. So people are going to be very impressed. People are going to be very happy. And we're going to take care of a very big and very dangerous problem for the world. And I want to thank Chairman Kim. Spent a lot of time together today, very intensive time. And I would actually say that it worked out for both of us far better than anybody could have expected. I think far better. I watched the various news reports. I would say far better than anybody even predicted. And this is going to lead to more and more and more. And it's an honor to be with you. Very great honor. Thank you. Thank you to all of your representatives very much.
The eloquent Mr. Trump.
Yeah, and you know, when we're reading this report about how, I guess, vague these statements were, yeah. but just what we heard from Donald Trump was the epitome of that expression.
Well, it was, and not surprising as well. That's pretty much, I think, his style. I managed to catch it while it was being televised, yeah. Mid-meeting. Mind you, we all stopped the meeting to witness this.
Of course.
And just watching it, you're thinking, wow, you know, it's happening, a little bit surreal. He's going to win the Nobel Peace Prize, isn't he? That's what you're thinking.
Yes, but you want, the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. I mean, despite our feelings towards President Trump or Kim Jong-un. But what's going to be interesting is, I guess, also what this actually translates to in terms of action and over what sort of time period as well, because there are so many different parties in the region who are going to be closely watching what exactly these developments are.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for all of North Korea's grandstanding over the years, sometimes following through on those threats, for observers, I guess, who have been following developments in North Korea, it feels as though there's a very skeptical feeling in the air. You know, I say keep your emotions in check. You know, don't go all out there and celebrate anytime just yet, because I think many analysts are not that convinced as well, simply because, you know, historically it's never worked out well. They're also been very short on the details, right?
Yeah, well, you know, just a few months after both leaders exchanged insults and threatened imminent war, they went out of their way to be gracious towards each other, and then it's sort of gone back and forth. And through an interpreter, Kim Jong-un replied saying that it had not been easy to come to this point for us. The past has been holding us back, and old practices and prejudices have been covering our eyes and ears, but we have been able to overcome everything. So this is a big statement from Kim Jong-un himself.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's been pretty interesting to watch Singapore, obviously, play the host.
Absolutely.
To this momentous occasion. Apparently, all the roads and expressways leading from the St. Regis and Singapore and Shangri-La hotels were on lockdown, and there were many people gathering at different spots along the route trying to catch a glimpse of the two leaders. You know, there is someone who's quoted there saying, this is a once-in-a-lifetime moment, very important. Yeah. We want to you know, be a part of it. We want to witness it. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, just all these momentous occasions they're witnessing from the sidelines, or sometimes across the causeway as well.
I see what you're getting there.
Bless them, Singaporeans.
Well, we're going to hear from Dr. Na Liang Tuang from the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies in Singapore shortly after this to give us his thoughts on, I guess, the potential basic consensus of what this denuclearization program might look like. Stay tuned to the evening edition. We've got some music by the Jimmy Castor Bunch. It's just begun. BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Caroline and Ezra on the Evening Edition. We've been talking about the meeting between American President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un at a historic summit that took place in Singapore. We're going to cross over to North Korean expert Dr. Na Liang Tuang. He's a research fellow at the Military Studies Program with the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies. Thank you very much for joining us on the Evening Edition. And maybe if we can sort of dial it back a little bit and discuss how we got to this point. What were the circumstances that led to the summit?
Oh, well, we're looking at basically two fronts. First and foremost, as has been admitted by some North Korean sources, they have developed their nuclear arsenal to a certain extent that they feel confident enough to demand equal treatment for the United States, that they have enough self-confidence to say that, yes, we're equal, yes, we're a nuclear power, now we have something that you want, let's deal. On the second front, I would quite confidently posit, in as much as North Korea says it's not true, that since 2016, there has been very tight and very pressurizing sanctions, United Nations Security Council sanctions placed upon North Korea. And in that period of time, if you're looking at about 2 years, roughly approximately 2 years of economic pressure, which has placed the North Korean economy in a vice-like grip, definitely had an impact on Chairman Kim's strategic calculus. So I would say that he has decided that now as good a time as any to cut a deal or to negotiate, to begin negotiations before his economy is placed in a position of almost perpetual stagnation.
Right. So, you know, we have these two controversial leaders with vastly differing styles of leadership, obviously trying to strike a peace deal. Any thoughts on how this could go awry?
Well, fundamentally, the way that I see it is that with North Korea, actually, to be honest with you, North Korea and the United States under Trump both have a transactional approach to international politics. They basically want something for something, the quid pro quo approach. If you've looked at North Korea's previous behavior, in the times when any negotiations or any agreements have been successful temporarily, it is because there's been a quid pro quo. North Korea has done something and received something in return. The only thing that I can see going wrong with any agreement going down the road is if we see stagnation, if we see a loss of momentum, if North Korea does something and does not get something in return quickly enough, and there's a loss of momentum to the process, then you'll begin to see a form of frustration on North Korea's side. You will see political pressure from the more hawkish components or the more hawkish factions within Pyongyang putting pressure on Kim to break whatever agreement's been done, and then everything will go down the hill from then on. But so as long as momentum is maintained and North Korea continues to see benefits coming out from its negotiations and its deals, then I think that, well, this time we may just see a very happy outcome.
Now, even if both of these parties have signed this deal, could they go back on their word, and what would some of the ramifications of that be?
Okay, of course, to be honest with you, yes, either party could go back on their word. If for some reason congressional pressure or political pressure from the United States forces President Trump to water down his deal, then we are faced with a situation whereby Kim has either to decide to accept the watered down deal or to simply just call it off. I cannot presume to predict what goes on within Kim Jong-un's mind. But suffice it to say, if he decides that that any watered down deal is not worth it, then you're looking for a return back to square one. And when you return back to square one, I think this case will be quite dismal, because they've given a shot. They've given a summit diplomacy between the U.S. president and the ROK leader a shot, and it didn't work out. I'm quite hesitant to predict how international diplomacy will go from there on, because that will look like a pretty bleak situation. On the other hand, right, North Korea going back on their deal is pretty much par for the course. It's very, very common. We've come to expect it. There are many hawks within the U.S. who kind of predict that North Korea is going to go back on whatever deal you cut with it. But if North Korea does go back on its deal, then you're basically faced with two outcomes. Firstly, if Kim just wants to muddle by and survive, he doesn't care about the welfare of his people, then it is actually in his interest to pocket whatever benefits or whatever sanctions relief that he can in the short term, and then go back on his word to retain his nuclear arsenal. But that effectively would condemn his people to a permanent and prolonged loss of economic welfare. On the other hand, if he actually wants to reform his economy, if he wants to turn his country into a prosperous nation, if he wants to follow the Chinese model, the Vietnamese model, or even Kazakhstan's model for that matter, then it would be in his interest not to go back on any deal, because he would need a significant amount of time to restructure and to overhaul his economy. And that amount of time that he needs depends on him actually denuclearizing and actually receiving the full raft of economic benefits, which the U.S., ROK, or even China can promise him over the length of his entire denuclearization.
All right. So between North Korea, the U.S., South Korea, China, even Japan, who would you say are the, I guess, winners and losers from the summit?
I would say that actually, I think everybody comes out a winner, with the exception possibly of Japan. Because if Japan's interests were not discussed in the summit, if the signed declaration or any subsequent agreements don't take care of Japan's national interests, then we could see a case whereby Japan neither wins nor loses. Japan rather endures a status quo situation. So it's not a matter of who will lose, but the fact of the matter is who will relatively gain more from an agreement. And if Japan's interests are not looked after, then Japan could find itself the de facto loser by the mere fact that it hasn't gained nor lost anything.
A final question before we let you go. What do you think comes next after this summit?
What's next after the summit? Well, Trump has already said that when asked whether he would invite Kim Jong-un over to the White House, and he said, oh, absolutely. But Trump tends to say these things. Whether he or not, that will actually happen, and I think altogether, considering the significant amount of distaste that both the Senate and Congress have for the Kim regime, whether it's grandfather, son, or grandson. However, what I can say is that there will definitely be further meetings at the ambassadorial level or the senior foreign ministry and State Department level to hammer out further details on what needs to be done to promote North Korea's denuclearization or nuclear disarmament, followed by whatever steps must be taken to loosen sanctions and provide incentive for North Korea to cooperate.
Well, Dr. Na, thank you very much for your insights and analysis. That was Dr. Na Liang Tuang, Research Fellow at the Military Studies Program. That's at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies in Singapore.
Yeah, that's right. Well, speaking of being in Singapore, the U.S. State Department seems to think that Singapore is still part of Malaysia.
Is that right?
Well, the venue, the press briefing that was given by the Secretary of State, right, Mark Pompeo, the venue was described as the JW Marriott Singapore, Malaysia, on the department's official website.
It's been corrected, I imagine.
It has since been corrected, but you know, that's gonna be, I mean, 63 years after their departure, many, many chili crab marketing campaigns later, this has got to hurt.
All right, we've got some music by the great John Butler Trio, Only One, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.